Jim Luce is going to share his thinking and thoughts.
You can go as far as you like, provided you don't step on the stone. Mm. I mean, if you sit on the stone, it's fine.
But the monuments and temples is here.
That is the temple, but there is a theater, yes. And higher up there is a stadium. This is the main temple. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Young leaders, welcome on the sacred grounds of Apollo. Right now you're being embraced by the Apollonian force, which will guide you to great victories. It will enlighten you with knowledge and wisdom. And like Maria said, there were the Delphic maxims that were written on the column, which are no longer here. And two very important maxims is know thyself, gnothis afton, και μηδέν άγαν, and nothing in excess, everything in moderation. Two very, very important maxims to take with you as a guide in your lives. I'm very, very touched because I do feel the energy and the powers of Apollo. I do feel the significance of these grounds, not only for the prophecies, but also for the light. The people were enlightened to lead their lives and to do good. And this is why you are here, because first you need to know yourselves, who you are, and what you want to do, and how you want to embrace humanity, and how you want to protect our planet Earth. Look how sacred these grounds are. You have absorbed so much energy these past few days that this energy will remain with you forever. We are all blessed, and you are blessed to have a mentor and a leader like Jim Luce to guide you along the way. And I will guide you as well. I'm always here and I will always be here for you. I love you, and I love you, Jim.
Good morning. It's extraordinarily exciting to be here, and I wanted to share with you this morning why I chose to care. And I wanted to thank Georgia Nomikos, one of our board members of the J. Luce Foundation, for bringing us here and the Orpheus Luxury Collection, and we're here because of her Hellenic viewpoint and her being a Hellene, which not only means helping the world, but it means introducing the world to values that come from this period of our history, which is really the cradle of democracy and philosophy and all of Western civilization as we know it, and she's been sharing that with us here in the footsteps of Apollo, to the Acropolis, to all the temples that we've seen. And so thank you so much for your leadership.
Thank you. Thank you for making me a part of this. Thank you.
So as you all know, I arrived in New York City 36 years ago with a background in Japanese literature from Tokyo. And I got a job with a Japanese bank, and they taught me finance. And I worked on Wall Street for decades, but it wasn't enough. I wanted to do more than that. And I got involved with animal rescue. I lived out in Queens, and I had a house, and I had four dogs and six cats. And that was really important to me to do something to give back. And as I rescued animals, I thought it was good. But it wasn't quite enough. I wanted to be doing more. It's important to help animals. But there's so many problems in the world, and just the four dogs and six cats wasn't cutting it. And I wanted to do something bigger. And it's a long, complicated story, but I ended up in Indonesia, and we passed this orphanage. And in New York, I would stop at an orphanage, and I would go in and give the lady $100 and pet the animals. And I'm like, wow, this is an orphanage. I'm not really familiar with orphanages, but these are people. This is human beings. This is more important than a dog or a cat. And so we stopped, and we went in, and it was this huge warehouse of human beings, of infants. And they were extraordinarily loved. It was extraordinarily clean, but they had no resources. And so I spoke with them, and we gave the woman $100. We spoke with her, and we toured the facility. And it was kind of like an airplane hangar with lots and lots of cribs back to back. And this was back before they had diapers in Indonesia. And all the kids were naked from the waist down. They would just clean up the cribs every day and wash them and take them out. It was right on the equator, and they put the mattresses in the sun, and they would dry really quickly. And as we walked through there, all the kids were lying down and very lethargic, but there was this one infant who was standing up in the crib, and it's like, pick me up, pick me up. And I asked if I could pick him up, and they said, sure. And I didn't, you know, I was an uncle, I had some nephews and a niece, but I didn't really know how to pick him up, but I picked this kid up. And there was just this bond between us. It was incredible. And I'd say why I choose to care is really based on three significant events in my life, what we call watershed events or epiphanies. And this was really my first epiphany. And they were all about 4 years apart, which is interesting. This was 1996. And I picked this kid up, and I just felt that this kid was the most important kid in the entire world, and he shouldn't be here. He had to get out of there. And I asked if there's any way that we could make that happen, and it was not easy, but we brought the kid back, and as you all know, this is Matthew James Pinney and Luce here today, and that was an incredible experience for me. So as a result of that, my mom started to push me to do stuff with orphans and orphanages around the world. I thought if we could raise $50 to help this orphanage, or $500 or $5,000, what a difference it would make. So we fast forward, and we end up in Haiti. And in Haiti, it's the world's poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. It's only 3.5 hours from New York. And we discovered that it was there. And through a variety of circumstances, I was able to tour the poorest neighborhood called Cité des Soleils, City of the Sun, in Haiti. And it's the biggest slum in the Western Hemispheres. And as we toured the slum, the mayor of one segment of the slum gave us this tour. And the children were baking cakes made out of mud that they would then eat because they had nothing to eat, and they were literally eating dirt. And there were some nutrients in the dirt that they were able to eat. But the homes were made out of garbage, and tin shacks and stuff, and they were eating garbage to survive. It was just absolutely pathetic. And there was this sewage kind of canal that the government had built out of cement that went through this huge slum. And it was filled with, like, I think originally it was pretty deep, but it was kind of filled up with sewage over the years that was impacted. And it was so impacted that there were actually pigs walking around on top of the sewage looking for food and whatnot. And then there was the slum continued on the other side. And there was this kind of narrow footbridge with no railing across the canal from one side to the other. And in the middle, the planks were missing. We had to jump over, and I was so scared we were going to fall in. And I asked, you know, why the planks were missing, why they weren't replaced. And there's this conversation in Creole, and the leaders talked to each other, and basically I could hear enough Creole to hear the conversation. It was like, should we share with him the truth, or should we make it up like we usually do? And they decided to share with us the truth. And I'm thinking, okay, it's like the people on either side are enemies and they're fighting each other, so they ripped up some planks so they can't sneak across and beat each other. That was my thought. And the mayor said, well, it's kind of a gruesome truth, but this place is such a hell that on nights when there's no moon, expectant mothers come here to this bridge and they bear their children through the hole in the bridge into the sewage canal, and the pigs will eat the infant before it drowns in the sewage. That's the kind of hell it is. And I was working on Wall Street, and I just thought, if there's anything that we could do that human beings would not exist like that, that I should do it. And that was my second epiphany. And the third reason I chose to care was back in Indonesia and Bali, 4 years later, and that would have been 2004, and Bali is this resort and people come from around the world and it's wonderful and there's 5-star hotels and everything's absolutely fabulous, but there's a secret that in the middle of Bali exists this huge garbage dump. And I was connected enough to the government to be able to get into the garbage dump, and they searched me to make sure that I didn't have a camera, a microphone, it was a huge hidden secret. But I announced to the socialites there at a party, it was New Year's Day, and I wanted to go there and give presents to the children. So New Year's Eve, I was at a party with the rich and famous in Indonesia. And they all said, oh, we'll go with you. You shouldn't go by yourself as an American. These are Indonesian children, we'll go with you. So off we went in about 3 SUVs packed full of presents, and we arrived in the garbage dump. And if you can imagine the garbage dump in Staten Island, you know, you've seen pictures of that, where it's just garbage, garbage, garbage built up. It was like that, and it was covered with huge puddles and broken glass and tin cans, and there were about 40 children, basically naked, barefoot, living there in the garbage dump. And we pulled up and the children came over. It was like Lord of the Flies. We got out of the car and these children were covered in dirt and just absolutely abject poverty, impoverished, and I've never seen children living like that in my life. And they were ages maybe 8 weeks to 8 years old, and maybe 12 years old, one of them, a girl. And they gathered around us, and we had these presents for them for New Year's, and they didn't even know it was New Year's. It was just presents. And I thought, oh my God, they're going to be fighting, you know, over the presents and whatnot. So we explained in Indonesian why we were there. And the 12-year-old girl had the kids line up, and she was in charge. And the present would be open, and she'd say, well, these are shoes, and Beth needs shoes, and Beth is an American name, but whatever their names were. And this is whatever it would be, and this is appropriate. And the kids would not fight for it. They wouldn't complain. They would simply take the gift. And as she handed out the gifts, I thought, these kids have more dignity than any people I've ever seen in my life, despite having nothing. And that these people had more dignity than the clients that I was working for on Wall Street, the millionaires that I was helping make richer. And I thought, if I'm going to cast my life in lot, I would rather help these people and not the people on Wall Street, because the people on Wall Street can take care of themselves. Who's going to take care of these kids? And so that's what I really wanted to get involved with. And that was the third epiphany that I had. When I was in high school, I read a book by Jerzy Kaczynski called The Painted Bird. And The Painted Bird is about peasants in Poland who got their kicks from catching a bird and painting it all sorts of brilliant colors and letting it go. And of course, the bird would be panicked and go back to its flock. But the flock would see this really weird painted thing coming back to it, and they would form up, and they would attack their own kind, not knowing it was their own, and kill it, and it would fall to the ground. And the peasants found this very funny, to find these dead painted birds on the ground. And when I was in high school, my grandmother told me that the two people in the world that were the most evil were Germans and Japanese, because of her experience in World War II. And I thought, growing up, that it's impossible that a people be evil, but I couldn't prove it, so I wanted to go off and see for myself. And that's how I ended up as an exchange student in high school to Germany, and an exchange student to Japan in college. And when I first came back from Germany, I was back in America, and I'd spent a whole year making sure the lights were off because we're conserving electricity, making sure your shower's only so long because we're preserving the environment, we're trying to help, you know, the world, and recycling and all of these things. And I go back to Ohio, where I lived in the 1970s, and my friends all had their own car, their parents' car. And we were playing this game where we had about 12 cars, and we were playing Follow the Leader. And we were driving around through parking garages and whatnot, just having fun. And I was the last car. And I'm thinking, what a waste of resources this is. And my friends just weren't getting the fact that, you know, there's a world out there that we needed to be involved with. There was an environment that we needed to protect. And so finally, going through the parking garage, I made a decision which really changed my life. And that is, when they all put their blinkers on to turn left, I put my blinker on and turned right. And I drove home and I said, you know, I'm not going to be part of that group. And I kind of became the painted bird. And I kind of became ostracized. And that's why I made up my mind that one day I'd move to the big city, to New York, where I could be involved with more international people. And that's how I ended up here. And as you know, in New York, my mom passed away and she left some funds to begin Orphans International and really begin to work effectively in helping orphans around the world and raising global leaders, raising global citizens, and that was very important to me. And then as my father passed away, we began to get involved with education and talking about raising young global leaders, such as yourselves, and that was very important to us. And that's how the Young Global Leadership Initiative began. I wanted to begin to impart my love of the arts and education and orphan care to young leaders and help you guys get a grasp of why it's important and why you can choose to care or not. That's up to you. That's a very deeply personal decision. But that's where we are today. That's why you've created, finished 200 hours of our Young Global Leadership Initiative on Roosevelt Island. That's why you've been involved with helping us with our annual leadership galas, with our Orphans International summer soirees. We're starting to plan our first World Congress. That's why you've come on this Young Global Leadership Experience to Hellas and to begin to absorb Hellenic virtues. So I have a question to you. And that question that I want you to answer while you're here to George and I and to Paul Slatkus is, what do you guys plan to do? What will you do? What will you do? What will you do? And what will you do? And that's how we're going to end today. Thank you all very much. That's it. Okay, group hug, group hug. Okay, my little sister, Israel. You're not Israel. Valentine. Thank you. Israel. Oh, I love you, yeah. Maria, come get a hug. New family.
I think that worked out very well. The rain stopped Amazing. For a moment.
Yes, because this happened.
I want a hug.
A hug to Paul Slatkus. What's the good news, Paul?
You're the good news. This whole group is the good news.
It's a beautiful, good news.
Beautiful, beautiful time.
Thank you very much for this amazing orientation. Thank you for all this information you gave us.
I thank you very
It's very
much.
Inspiring.
I thank you very much. I'm honored and I'm touched to be here with you. I think I'm fortunate too, and I don't think this is just by chance. I think there's a reason in it.
Of course there is, yes. So Apollo Brothers
and
together.
For the record, it was raining. It stopped raining, and now it's raining
now
again.
Now that we're finished, it started. Yes.
I think it's a coincidence, but who knows?